No matter where a family lives, welcoming a baby into the world can be a joyous occasion. Yet how a woman experiences birth varies drastically from country to country. 32% of births in North America are a result of C-section. Among the 50 states, Utah actually ranked lowest at 22.3% births by C-section. Although not as common as traditional births, we got an insider point of view on C-sections from Ogden Clinic Women Health Specialist, Dr. Daniel Ferguson. Dr. Ferguson completed medical school at Creighton University School of Medicine, followed by a residency at St. Joseph's Hospital. Dr. Ferguson has continued to develop his experience by helping establish a laborist program in California. He performs the full spectrum of gynecological care and obstetrics and enjoys seeing his patients throughout all stages of life. Welcome to The Daily Diagnosis, a healthy lifestyle podcast provided by Ogden Clinic. We're your prescription for health-centered conversation, stories, and advice. I'm Parker Shaw, and with the help of my team and featuring the talented providers of Ogden Clinic, you'll reach a positive prognosis for your podcast addiction by listening to The Daily Diagnosis. All right, everybody, welcome back to The Daily Diagnosis. This is Parker from the marketing team.
And April on the marketing team.
And today on our episode, we have a special guest, one of our newer providers for Ogden Clinic, Dan Ferguson. Dr. Ferguson, do you want to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Well, yes. Hi, I'm Dr. Ferguson. I've been in the community for quite a while, mostly practicing in northern Utah for about the last 10 years. And then more recently, I have moved to Ogden Clinic, and I'm at the Layton office there on the fourth floor.
So just clarifying, you work in the Layton Hospital location, correct? The one that's just off of Layton Parkway?
That's right.
Perfect. The beautiful new building. Love it.
It's fantastic.
Really cool. That's really awesome. Well, we wanted to get to know you a little bit outside of some of your professional stuff. What are some of your favorite hobbies outside of work?
Well, we enjoy a lot of things. We like to do things together as a family. In the wintertime, skiing, snowmobiling, summertime, we like to be out on the water, do a lot of boating. And
yes, that sounds really nice right now.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite experience doing any of those hobbies?
I think it's just being with the family is the main thing. I remember when when my kids were little, they'd be a little bit afraid of the water. And of course, they'd have their life jackets on and everything, and they wouldn't want to go out in the water. And my wife was kind of upset with me, but I would just pick them up and throw them in, and they would, just kind of thrash around in the water for a while, but they got really comfortable with it. And now they're just basically fish.
That's awesome.
My son now swims for the Box Elder High School swim team.
So that's awesome. He should be thanking you then.
Exactly.
That's really cool.
So are you from up north in Brigham City?
So my wife and I both grew up in Sandy, and we met at the University of Utah when we were doing our undergrad, and went to medical school in Nebraska, and then went to Arizona for training in Phoenix, and then spent a little while in Tooele, Utah, about 5 years before we moved to northern Utah in Brigham City.
Okay.
So you guys have bounced around a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
That's cool.
And then where did your passion for obstetrics and gynecology come from?
Well, that's a good question. When I was just starting medical school, of course, everybody asks you, well, what are you going to do? What specialty are you going to go into? And I would say, well, I don't know for sure. I kind of thought oncology, but I told him for sure I'm not going to do psychiatry or OBGYN.
Oh, really?
Really?
When did that change?
So as you get into the first clinical years, you start studying a lot about the different specialties. And I thought the science was pretty interesting with pregnancy and maternal medicine. And I guess what really clinched it for me is, during your third year of medical school, you start doing rotations in different things like surgery and medicine and family practice and OBGYN. And I did my internal medicine rotation first, and I really liked the medicine part of it. I thought it was very interesting, but I didn't really like the revolving door and, treating patients and in the hospital, and then they would go home and come back a couple weeks later, you'd see the same patients with the same problems. Mm. And I just didn't really like that aspect of it. And then when I did my surgery rotation, I really liked surgery, and no offense to surgeons, but the surgeons that I trained with in medical school weren't very nice people. And so I like surgery, but not the surgeons. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm. When I did OBGYN, I thought it was just a great mix of both, because there's a lot of medicine, but it was mostly working with healthy patients. And there's a lot of surgery, but I thought the OBGYN surgeons were a lot nicer and more friendly, down-to-earth people. And I kind of identified with their demeanor and how they acted. So, but I think the real, I don't know if there's a key moment. I think when I delivered my first baby, I just was amazed, and it just, you know, it just was such a great experience to be involved with life and the birth of a new child into the world. And I just fell in love with obstetrics, basically.
Yeah, it's a really special time in a woman's life. And yeah. And you get to see your patients for those few months consecutively during that really transformative time. That's great.
Yeah, exactly. I remember thinking at the time, you know, I did an anesthesiology rotation my fourth year, and my professor was really, we really clicked, and he was really trying to talk me into anesthesiology. So I was going between the two, anesthesiology or OB. And what it came down to for me is I thought, what drives me is relationships. Mm-hmm. And with anesthesiology, I just didn't know if I could be happy and satisfied just meeting somebody, putting to sleep, waking them up, yep. and then never seeing them again.
Yeah, there's not that interaction.
You know, I've had experiences with OB where, you know, I've delivered somebody's entire family.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. then in some cases taken care of their children and their pregnancies. So it's just very satisfying to have the relationships. And I think that's what ultimately drives me.
That's awesome. Well, speaking of deliveries, we wanted to ask if you have any examples of a standout or memorable delivery, and that can be any sort of like delivery, like some maybe comical or inspiring. Do you have any that like stick out in your mind that you'd want to share with our audience?
Well, you know, there is one kind of funny one. I was taking care of somebody that was actually my neighbor, and we had been in Colorado as a family, and I kind of worried about her the whole time because I knew she was getting close, and I was really worried I might miss her delivery. So we were out in Colorado. Actually, I was hunting. I do a little bit of hunting, and I was hunting. We'd hunted elk there, but this time we were hunting a bear. And so I was actually successful.
Wow.
And so we, you know, we had the bear in our SUV in the back, and we were heading back to Utah, and I was calling labor and delivery saying, oh, did this patient come in yet? Cause I was really anxious about it. Cause you know, when you go through 9 months or typically 7 months, cause patients come in around 8 or 10 weeks, but mm-hmm. You really get to know them, and you just have that relationship. You want to be there for their delivery as much as they want
yeah.
you to be there.
Oh, for sure.
And so I was calling in, you know, did this patient come in? And they said no. And I'm like, oh, great. That's so good. So we were driving back and got to about Price, and labor and delivery calls. And they're like, this patient came in. And I'm like, oh, no. She's in active labor. So anyway, I just... you know, don't advocate speeding, but I was driving about 100 miles an hour through Spanish Fork Canyon. And fortunately, I didn't get pulled over, just sped the whole way back I-15 to, you know, got back to Brigham City. And my family's with me, you know, my wife and my two kids.
And the bear and the...
And the bear
and the car. The
back. Yeah. And so anyway, we... you know, I sped in, I got there, you know, rushed in through the back entrance and got in and made it in time for the delivery.
He made it!
At about, I don't know, 15 minutes to be with her before she actually delivered.
Wow.
And I was there for the delivery, which was great. And then after, you know, spent quite a quite a bit of time with her after the delivery, just talking and holding their baby and just enjoying the moment. And then they're like, well, you know, I told them the story and they're like, well, where's your family? And I'm like, well, they're still in the car.
Really?
And they're like, with the bear? And so
that's
anyway.
Awesome.
I bet she felt pretty special.
We see them a lot and it's a fun memory we share. And they've been to our house because I had the bear, you know, kind of stuffed like the whole body. And they were just like, that's our bear that, you know. When,
you can name it after their child.
When Luke was born, you know.
That is such a funny story.
That's way cool.
Yeah.
Well, way to make it. That's awesome. I feel like that's probably a little hard and tricky is to feel like you have to be there and be on call and, you know, have that, mm-hmm. you know, responsibility of being there. But that's cool that you're able to make it. Well, that kind of actually leads us into our topic for the day. We wanted to ask you, with all of your years of practice and experience, some questions involving labor and delivery. And this kind of actually ties in with our episode that we did last week. We did some with another OBGYN, Amber Bay. We asked some what you should expect when you're expecting. And now this is kind of a follow-up episode with what should you expect when you are in labor and delivery. So we kind of wanted to dive into that topic and we'll just kind of go through and ask some questions about that. Does that sound okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Perfect. So one of the first ones that, I don't know, I know from the perspective of a woman, like delivery can probably sound scary or labor can sound scary. And could you just walk us through some common things that you see?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So I think one of the first things to keep in mind is that it's important to identify any potential problems and mitigate them to the extent possible before you get to labor and delivery. So I wanted to emphasize the importance of prenatal care because it allows us an opportunity to identify problems early and try to intervene before they become bigger problems. It's very important to try to reduce the chances that people will have problems when they come into labor and delivery.
Yeah, definitely.
But I'm very aware of what can happen on labor and delivery, and even dealing with people that come in with no prenatal care. In fact, I took a 2-year break from Brigham City before I joined Ogden Clinic, and I was actually out in California establishing a laborist program for Adventist Health in Northern California. So I'm very aware of having to be ready and knowing the kinds of things that can happen on labor and delivery. But now some of the routine things that can happen. And first of all, before I say that, I don't want patients to be scared of labor and delivery.
Yeah, definitely.
Because usually everything goes really well. And typically it's smooth. And sometimes there are some minor issues that we can intervene to maximize it for patients. But generally, things go really smoothly, and it's nothing to be afraid of. But some of the things that commonly come up are there can be labor complications that can be an indication for abdominal delivery. I know that most patients, when they come to labor and delivery, are expecting to deliver, you know, a normal vaginal delivery. But sometimes C-sections happen. And,
for sure.
And so I thought maybe I'd talk about some of the reasons why you might have to have a C-section.
Sure.
So one reason is because the passenger can sometimes be too big to fit through the mom's bones. So there can be a little bit of molding of the baby's head as it comes through. They can kind of, they have what's called sutures in their skull and their cranium, and they can kind of mold a little bit to get through the birth canal. But there's only so much of putting, you know, a square peg through a round hole.
Mm. Right.
And you reach a point in time where the mechanics just don't work, and that bone, the skull, cannot get through the mom's bone, the pelvic inlet. And so in those cases, we call that cephalopelvic disproportion, meaning that the head just can't fit. And so if that's the case where, you know, the head can't get through, that would be an indication for an abdominal delivery. There can also be some problems with the mom's uterus. Sometimes the uterus just can't generate enough force to either completely dilate the cervix or to get the baby to come down through those bones. And so we can do things to intervene to try to help the uterus. So we can add some medicine called Pitocin. It's a, you know, it's a analog to the naturally forming oxytocin that the mom makes in labor. And we can add that in a very controlled way while we're monitoring the baby for safety to help the uterus be stronger to help the baby, or to first of all help the cervix dilate all the way and to help the baby come down through the birth canal. So, but nevertheless, despite our intervention, sometimes we just can't get the uterus to do what it needs to do. And at some point in time, if the uterus won't do it, we just have to say that, you know, that it was failure to progress, and sometimes that's a C-section. Another reason, of course, is because the baby is not tolerating the labor. So we have to keep in mind that our most important goals in this whole thing is to have a healthy mom and a healthy baby. That's kind of our mantra, is healthy mom, healthy baby. Mm-hmm. And we just can't even have one baby not do well. We've got to make sure that every single baby has a good outcome. And so if the baby is not tolerating the labor well, of course, there's some things that we can do to try to intervene and help the baby do better. Maybe if the patient's on the Pitocin, we can turn that off and let the baby recover. We can administer oxygen to the mom. We can do position changes. Sometimes the cord is getting smashed, and so we'll notice based on the heart rate pattern if that's happening, and sometimes we can put in something called an intrauterine pressure catheter monitor. But nevertheless, sometimes the baby either has a very sudden deceleration that doesn't go away, and we have to do an emergency C-section. That can happen for various reasons, including sometimes the placenta separates from the uterus prematurely, and that's called a placental abruption. So in those cases, you know, we may need to do an emergency C-section, which is very rare, but does happen from time to time. And we all have to be ready for it in any moment, because we've got to get the baby out quickly if that happens.
Definitely.
So it sounds like it is possible. We hope that we don't have to do an emergency C-section, but if a mom needs a C-section, what is the difference between what can she expect having a C-section or having an emergency C-section?
Well, that's a great question. And I think a lot of moms tend to be a little bit apprehensive about that, and they want to avoid it. But sometimes it nevertheless happens. So what should she expect? Well, first of all, a lot of moms laboring already have an epidural. Mm-hmm. And so we can administer medicine through that epidural to make her so that she'll still be awake during the C-section, but she'll be completely numb. And usually the spouse or the partner can also accompany her to the operating room to be with her for the birth. And typically there's a drape that kind of comes up separating her from the operative field, so she won't see it. Although we can put a mirror up, so if she wants to see, she could. But
how many people want to see?
Sounds like a little intense.
Yeah. Very low. Yeah. I think a lot of dads kind of lean over the curtain and watch.
That's interesting.
But moms typically are just happy to,
yeah,
you know, just
like
lay
just
there
do and, it.
Yeah, exactly. So typically, when we go back to the operating room, if it's not an emergency, we just go back and there's a transfer from, you know, the bed to the operating room table. And we, you know, there's a preparatory time where we, you know, wash the belly and try to sterilize it as much as we can. And then there's drapes that go on, like we talked about. And we always test the mom before we actually make the incision. So we'll pinch her skin in the area where we're going to do the incision so that she can be sure that she's not feeling any sharp pain. Now, she will feel the pressure, so there will be a sensation of touch. And through the course of the operation, she'll feel kind of some pushing and pulling, but she won't feel any sharp pain.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. And we were very careful to test during that. So then the C-section happens, and I think a lot of moms are surprised how quickly the baby comes out. So if I'm in a hurry because the baby's in trouble, I can get the baby out in usually about 20 seconds.
Wow.
But holy cow.
Even when I'm not in a hurry, usually the baby's out within 2 or 3 minutes.
Wow.
I don't think I ever knew how long C-section takes.
Yeah, seriously, I had
That's
no
fast.
Idea.
So yeah, the babies come out very quickly. And then there's, you know, they usually, the baby, during a normal vaginal delivery, the baby's lungs get compressed as they come through the birth canal, and a lot of those fluids get squeezed out of the lungs. During a C-section, that doesn't happen, and mm-hmm. so usually the babies require a little bit of respiratory care by the nursery team when they're first born. And so the baby will go to the warmer, and the nursery team will do what they need to do to get the baby breathing well, which usually takes maybe 2 to 5 minutes or so. Then generally the baby comes to mom, and she can actually hold the baby while we're finishing the surgery.
Wow.
So the surgery usually takes about a half an hour or so to get everything finished up. And you know, some patients or some physicians will put surgical clips on the skin, which is acceptable, but I always sew the skin with suture because then it just absorbs and they don't have to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And patients get a little apprehensive about staples coming out sometimes. So yeah. I usually just put an absorbable suture in it with Steri-Strips, and then that way
that
it's
does
all,
the trick.
All mm-hmm. done. Yeah. Now, as far as an emergency C-section goes, it kind of depends if they already have an epidural or not. If they don't have an epidural, we usually don't have time to administer one. Mm. And so if that's the case, sometimes they just have to go to sleep. That's not ideal, but we have to remember our overarching goals of healthy baby, healthy mom.
For sure.
And when the baby is really in trouble, we've got to get the baby out super fast. So mm-hmm. generally, we just unplug the bed. The operating room is very close by. We can get the baby and the mom to the operating room usually within a couple of minutes. We just hurry and get her on the table. Everybody's doing multiple things while we're preparing for the surgery, which is going to happen, you know, as soon as possible, usually within 5 minutes. So everybody's going to be in a hurry, and it's going to seem pretty intense. Now, keep in mind that this is very rare that this happens.
Right.
But when it does happen, everybody's got to be ready and know their job. And so there's a lot of people in the room. Everybody has a purpose. And the goal is to get the patient ready for surgery very quickly. And so a lot of things will be happening simultaneously. And then at this time, right before we do the incision, usually the patient will be intubated, meaning that there's a tube that goes down the throat to help the patient breathe. That's after anesthesia has been induced. So in other words, you go to sleep, the tube goes in, and then they say go. And so as soon as that happens, like I said, I get the baby out super fast, usually less than 30 seconds. I think my record is like 17 seconds or something. I mean, it's very quick. So then we get the baby out, and the baby goes to the newborn ICU mm-hmm. team or to the nursery team, as the case may be. And then we finish the surgery and then, you know, wake the patient up after. And then by then, usually the baby's ready for her to hold. And so we hope that doesn't happen, but the most important thing is that if it does happen, we respond quickly so that we maximize the outcome for the baby.
Perfect.
Well, sometimes when a C-section might be indicated for whatever reason, we can avoid the C-section by doing an operative vaginal delivery. A lot of times we can deliver the baby without the C-section if a mom will allow the forceps delivery. But again, I don't require it of patients. It's optional. If she'd rather do the C-section, we just do the C-section. But a lot of moms trust me, and I've never had a bad outcome with forceps. And I attribute that to my excellent training during residency. Mm-hmm. So that's an option for patients if we get in that situation. But again, most patients do well, don't need any operative vaginal delivery or abdominal delivery.
Right.
So just talking about what happens if we're in that situation.
Yeah. Wow, my heart is kind of racing. I
know,
we're
going through this.
it's really
comforting to know as a patient that there's so many options thanks to modern medicine and training and technology that we do have those options in case of an emergency or when it's indicated.
Yeah. And I think it's evident in how knowledgeable you are that it just seems like, I'm like, I would trust you. I feel like that's really great.
Absolutely.
So yeah. So thank you so much, Dr. Ferguson, for kind of walking us through this. This is, like we said, been new information for a lot of us. And I think it really helps to know prior to any sort of like birthing experience of like what could possibly happen
and what your options are.
Options are great to know as well. So thank you so much for everything that you shared to us. And for all of our audience listening today, thanks for tuning in to
The Daily Diagnosis.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of The Daily Diagnosis. We're so happy that you joined us today. If you would like to find more information about Ogden Clinic, our providers or locations, visit us at ogdenclinic.com. If you're listening today from Apple Podcasts app, make sure you leave us a review or subscribe so you can receive more information about the different episodes that we post. We love getting feedback from our audience, so those reviews are priceless to us. If you also would like to shout us out on social media, our Instagram handle is @OgdenClinic. You can also send us a DM if there's a topic that you would like our providers to cover, and we really look forward to hearing from you. We post episodes weekly, so tune in next week, and we can't wait to be with you again. Have a great week.